Welcome to the Consulting Pipeline Podcast. My guest on the show today was Stephen Coonsley. And what Stephen does, he'll explain more, but he helps organizations move onto the cloud. And in particular, it tends to be organizations that have pretty strict security or scaling requirements. A bit after our conversation, I was taking a break and moving some wood chips into the garden for my wife today, and was reflecting on my conversation with Stephen. And I think one of the moments for me that I think was most illuminating, you'll hear me at some point in the conversation say to Stephen, you know, if we took an excerpt of what you just said and played it without the context of who you are, I think a lot of people would think that you're a management consultant. You know, he was talking about things you would expect some sort of management consultant to be talking about, things like process and lines of communication and team structure and stuff like that. And as I reflected on it, to me that seemed like a very illuminating moment because, okay, let's be honest, I have a bias here. Long-term listeners of this podcast know what the bias is. On the one hand, it is about this idea of specialization and the benefits thereof. But also, it sort of, you know, expanded version of that idea is that your technology, your pure technology skills will only take you so far in terms of value that you can create and demand for your services. And I guess my thesis here is that it's almost, I think, mandatory that you combine those raw technology skills with something else. And the something else, I think, I don't want it to be a mystery. I don't have great language for what it is. But it's through conversations like the conversation I had with Stephen that I think you start to get a glimpse of what that is if you've never seen it. Now, if you have seen it and tasted it firsthand, you know exactly what it is, even if, like me, you don't have the greatest language to describe it. But to me, it's vital. You have to couple your raw technical expertise with something else to really make that transition out of the confines of what a pure technologist can do in terms of value creation. And again, I want to hasten to add that you can do a lot in terms of value creation. Okay, I'm not trying to insult my audience or diminish who you are now if you're some sort of generalist software developer. But I think if you want to really build a business you can retire on, there's a number of things that are going to assault your ability to do that if all you can bring to the table is raw technical skill. And so as you're listening to this conversation with Stephen, pay attention to how he talks about the other stuff beyond just the raw technical skill, which in his case is, you know, skill with AWS, Amazon's AWS suite of cloud hosting products. Pay attention to what he talks about that's beyond the confines of that raw technical skill, because I think he's really illustrating one of the secrets is a sort of overused word in marketing. But, you know, it's that thing beyond just the raw technical skill that you have to bring into the mix in order to, I think, really deliver tons and tons of value. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Stephen. Okay, Stephen, we're live. Thanks for being here. Stephen, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, my name is Stephen, and I'm the principal consultant at Qualmente, and we guide teams to AWS securely and at scale. So this generally means you know, we work with clients who they're facing some sort of business problem where they need to grow by, say, 5, 10x, and they have a very nice top-line revenue problem, and we help them solve those problems securely using the cloud.
How do clients find you? That's a wonderfully succinct description of what you do and who you do it for, but how do the clients end up finding you?
So that's been quite a journey over the last 2 years. And it's kind of, I think, a natural progression for a lot of folks in that There's a referral network and your existing professional network via LinkedIn, and the people maybe who you used to be an employee for. And then I also work a lot with the local Phoenix meetups. So in the DevOps and Docker space.
Okay. I find like that matches to a T what most people tell me, which is like, well, you know, it was existing network connections at first. And then, I had to go somewhere from there. You and I met because you're on my email list and you responded to it to an email I sent out to the list where I was asking about client concentration. And you were telling me about transitioning from a situation where you had a lot of revenue concentrated in not a lot of clients to something that's, you know, where the revenue is more broadly distributed. So can you talk a little bit about like kind of the, you know, the situation you found yourself in? Probably, I'm going to guess, as a natural byproduct of most of your new business coming from like your an old employer or old associates, et cetera.
Right. So my first couple clients and existing clients are there. I still work with them. They did come out of my professional network and I first had engaged them and helped them solve problems like a traditional time-based engagement. Mm-hmm. And then as I was seeing what was common amongst what we were doing with them, and then when I was talking with other prospects and potential customers, I started to define things that were, I defined services that I thought were useful across them. So in a sense, I'm trying to refactor my business in the software sense of the term and pull out the common things and help people understand the valuable bits of what they need to do and accelerate their journey into the cloud and make it fun wherever we can, and just de-risk that transition for them.
So I'm going to be for a moment, maybe I am the dumbest guy in the room, but I'm going to be that guy for a moment. So you said looking for the common bits, and that makes sense to me. I know that makes sense to you. What did that actually look like? I'm not asking you to like name clients or give away details like that, but I mean, how does that unfold? Because I think a lot of people would love to be able to do that. They just haven't experienced it firsthand. So I'm hoping you can kind of bring that to life for them.
Right. So in my world, a lot of this comes down to people understand pretty easily that they want to take their application and they want to scale it up on AWS or one of the other major cloud providers. What they don't necessarily understand is how to do that, like what the network needs to be like, what kind of security features and facilities do I need? How do I get my application there? So whether that's continuous integration and delivery, like what do those constructs even look like? And so these are all things that are common across the industry. And there's many ways to solve them. And I've chosen to solve them with a particular set of technologies and really focused on trying to help customers with high security needs because that helps me tune my language and marketing and my implementations. So in terms of creating a scalable service catalog, I want to have something that's easy for people to say, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do a security assessment. And that can just be done with a credit card all the way on down to some engagement that is going to take, a quarter or more and be a much higher touch engagement that may involve other people on my team as well.
Right. I think you've probably heard this quote that's attributed to Henry Ford. And he was I don't know if he actually said this or not, but you know, he was attributed with saying, if I'd asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And, mm-hmm. you know, the sort of wisdom there is that sometimes people don't know what they really want. So when you're looking for these kind of patterns, is it coming from things you've heard your clients say, or is it more like you know what's best for them and it's focused around the problems that they all have in common?
Well, yes. So there's, in terms of building a faster horse, one of the things that clients certainly expect me to do is tell them that, you know, they don't necessarily know that they need a saddle or some reins.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I say, yeah, you know, you should have an intrusion detection system, or the HIPAA regulations say X. And so they're looking for that knowledge to help them understand what it is that they don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they want to know what are my options for solving this problem, and help me understand the implications of different solutions. And then, you know, do you have any code that automates any of these? Is often a follow on. And it's true that as I work with more and more clients, I see things that, you know, like certain ideas that may cross over and may be useful to apply from one client to another. You know, it almost always requires a little bit of adaptation outside of, you know, basic network security and those sorts of principles. But, you know, so that is another point of specialization. I feel that because you have the broader context, you can, you know, establish and build a knowledge base that you can reshare and like guide your clients on to new things and provide value over time. So for me, it's less of a risk to productize a service because some might say that, like, well, if you productize your service, then when that service is done, like, then what do you do? Well, first off, for me, it feels simpler from a business growth perspective to go find additional customers for that high value service. But on the other hand, as I work with additional clients, I'm also gaining skills and experience and knowledge that I can then reshare to everyone. You know, whether that's just pure content or like, hey, this is a new development in the industry, to like, you know, here's what here, you know, we last worked together in 2016. Here's what we're doing in 2018.
Right. Interesting. Okay. So how are you seeing, another thing you mentioned was like kind of finding the valuable bits, and people who work in the world of infrastructure, I feel like they have it harder because so often infrastructure is viewed as a cost, right? Like, oh, we got to, you know, acquire this server capacity, and it's not really thought of as an investment, I don't think. But what do you see from your perspective, and how possibly do you get clients to see it as an investment?
Yeah, so I think that is still a pretty common perception. It depends, I think, a lot on where people are, where businesses are in their growth curve. Many of the people I work with, they have recognized that they're at the limits of their current infrastructure deployment, mm-hmm. and that, like, literally to grow the business, that they have to grow their infrastructure. And so it becomes a simpler connection to this project supports top line revenue growth,
right?
When that's the case. On the other hand, I think you're very much correct that infrastructure teams often have trouble communicating what kind of value it is that they do bring to the table, which is essential.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about your value chain from customer down, you know, to server, you know, it includes the whole stack. And one of the big challenges I face is helping teams recognize that that initial move to the cloud, there's a lot of that iceberg that's below water that has to do with network and security and just deployment stuff. They may have solved these problems in their existing data center or world, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even more. And so they're not quite accustomed to thinking about like big migrations and big projects and how to even tackle them. So helping provide some structure and some language and help manage expectations around how challenging it's going to be to learn a whole bunch of new stuff, but then also give them an option for some training to help them do so, right?
Right.
But to accelerate that project, you know, that's a big chunk of what I do.
Right.
Is really help people explain what this transition is going to look like and give them some options for what the roadmaps look like and help them understand key decision points that they're going to need to make.
How much of that is intimately tied to the technology you're using? For instance, you're using AWS. If AWS went out of business tomorrow, and you're like, well, I guess we'll use, you know, Google's cloud platform.
Yeah.
How much of that would be different?
So it's kind of funny. I did a survey of the major cloud providers a couple months ago to help me understand this problem. And, you know, going to something like GCP, would position or repositioning my business would probably take 2 to 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Azure is more, and that's due to the nature of Azure is at least to me different.
Okay.
In structure, whereas GCP is more similar to AWS, but at the same time, a lot of the principles around, and that's more of like the implementation side of things. Many of the architectural principles are really going to be similar across those clouds. And so the choice to specialize in AWS is really more about meeting customers where they're at, and then being able to build a really deep portfolio of implementation and expertise around the existing services. And when I'm satisfied with the depth of those services, then, you know, I might add a GCP, or I might go ahead and say, yeah, let's do Azure because it's definitely looking like a really strong number two. And I understand a lot of the kinds of customers that are going there.
Oh, can you talk more about the last part, like insight into like the type of clients or understanding their world? Are you vertically specialized at all, or right now would you work with like any business that wants to make this transition from what they have now to AWS?
So this has been developing a strong set of customer personas that I do and that I want to work with and hope to communicate and like demonstrate value to has been critical in getting my business to the point where I'm genuinely happy wrapping up a week. And so I really look towards businesses that have high security needs. They're trying to grow, that they're, you know, they've got some business reason where they need to expand.
Okay.
You know, whether that is their marketing has finally gotten traction and that, you know, now they've got an MVP that is turning into a very successful business, or perhaps they've landed some large new client that, you know, brings PCI or HIPAA into scope.
Right.
And so what I want to do is I want to bring a set of solutions to those people that are like, yeah, you know, we have a healthcare focused startup, or we have a finance or banking focused, you know, enterprise that we need to grow, or some portion of enterprise I need to grow.
Okay. So you have a sort of very, reasonably small basket of, I would use slightly different language, but it's not meaningfully different. I would just say a basket of verticals where you know that they've got compliance needs or business needs that make them likely to be a good fit. Is that sort of how
That's
you
correct.
See it?
Okay. And that they are first looking to manage the risk around this new opportunity.
So I don't know if this is going to put you on the spot or not, but you said like you are actually able to make it fun for them, which I think most people would say, well, that can't possibly coexist with risk management. Like risk management is the serious thing. So I'm curious if you can elaborate a little bit on that. I imagine you can. There's probably some way to do both, but they do seem to be at odds.
Well, right. And certainly there's the serious side of, you know, reading through, HIPAA or whatnot.
Right. Yeah.
But the way I like to try and make this fun is, first off, we giving people the confidence that they are going to be doing something that is safe for their customers, for their company, and kind of getting the crazy out of their delivery process.
Okay.
And so, you know, trying to help them not be surprised by things. So I mentioned that one of the reasons that I'm working with clients, or they want me to work with them, is that they want for me to help them understand what it is they don't know. So helping keep them, keeping them from being surprised. And of course you can't lay it all on them at once, right? There's a progression. Mm-hmm. We can either move through the list of things, from an architectural point of view or from a delivery point of view. It doesn't matter, I think, too much, mm-hmm. but really helping make their journey smooth and helping them build a robust solution that makes them the hero of the project. Going back to like just classic marketing language, right? Like really trying to help them do that and help them achieve their own goals while they achieve their business's goals.
Yeah, and that doesn't just end with the sales copy on some web page, right? That you're really sort of hinting at how that goes throughout the life of a project, where empathy and a desire to for your clients, not for you to be the hero, but for your clients to be the hero, right?
Right. And this is really where I mentioned helping teams understand what kind of magnitude of a journey they're embarking on, and to help them understand that there's in order to make this journey in their environment, which involves a lot of risk management, here are some things, some practices that we're going to follow and some things you're going to learn, and giving them a roadmap for actually doing that. So one of the things I do is I help teams assess their skills and identify gaps and ways to fill that knowledge with a curated set of curricula for things like AWS security and networking and delivery and so forth. So, you know, that's really what I mean, and like helping make it comfortable and fun, because a lot of teams out there, they haven't had a lot of space given to learn the new thing. So they're always under the gun to deliver this fancy new reliable, you know, infrastructure or delivery process or whatever. But you know, they're asked to deliver an application, a mission critical application on top of it at the exact same time. And so one of the things I do is I really try to help make space for that. And whether that's managing expectations with the clients, stakeholders, and decision makers, or giving the like a training program, or just advising people on where it is that they're going and what things that they're going to have to navigate.
Yeah, and you could do exactly none of that if you didn't thoroughly understand the underlying technology, you know, the AWS
right.
platform, or really the AWS universe of stuff like that. Every time I look at right. a list of all the discrete services that are under the AWS cloud, it's like, geez, that's like a, you know, a menu at a Chinese restaurant.
It is.
so you couldn't, do this other stuff without the underlying technical competence. But and I have to just let everybody know, you included, Stephen, that I have this, you know, sort of bias or filter that I see things through, where I think, you know, the technical knowledge is important, but that's what creates competence. And competence is not, I don't think, what delights clients. What delights clients is real expertise. And to me, the distinction in what you're talking about is all these, you know, maybe you call them soft skills, or maybe it's the consulting part, or really it's sort of the communication part, where you're helping them with how they think about this more so than, and that's layered on top of being able to do the work. But to me, that seems like that's creating a lot of value for your clients.
Right, right. And so one of the talks that I've been getting a good reaction on recently, it involves really helping people understand that the delivery processes and the organizational structure that they have within their team, within their organization, are really the things that are going to either most enable success or most impede success. And like literally, you know, things like Conway's Law come into effect here. And the people who need to, you know, if we're talking about doing some new full new deployment in AWS or whatever, the platform is immaterial. You actually need to get the right people talking to each other and sitting next to each other and not communicating through project managers solely anyway. And that these are communication paths that maybe don't exist in the organization right now, mm-hmm. because they haven't done something like this in 10 years. And to help them understand those kinds of factors and reposition people, like literally, you know, so they sit next to each other, which really helps enable success.
You know, if we excerpted like the last, I don't know, 45 seconds or so of audio and told somebody that they were listening to a management consultant, I think most people would be like, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Right. So isn't that kind of funny that, you know, that plays a role in your work?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's less funny and intentional from my point of view.
Right.
Because I recognize that this is a huge chunk of the problem.
Yeah. It's like one of the fundamental risk factors that you're dealing with, right? Is how the project is run from a people perspective.
Right.
So that's very cool. How long, Stephen, did it take you to feel like you were the expert who could help shepherd your client through this, you know, these sort of unknown waters?
Well, you know, I feel like I am conservative by nature, although there are some folks out there who think I'm a big risk taker. So I guess opinions vary.
Sure.
And you know, what I've tried to do is because I'm more comfortable coming from a low risk point of view. I've always tried to grow my business and by working with clients in a way that, like, where I clearly say I'm an expert in space X, and you know, maybe that's containers, or and then expanded that scope mm-hmm. over time as my expertise has grown. And so that's how I've done it. I'm not sure if I answered your question entirely.
That was great. Like, am I right in saying that you would prefer to start with a small subject area so that you can feel like you've mastered it and
That's
satisfy
right.
that part of yourself that doesn't want to screw things up, which all of us
That's
have
right.
that.
To where I can go and genuinely say, yes, I can do this, or my team can do this for you, no problem. And to put a nice value-based delivery together.
Yeah.
And hopefully have plenty of time to just do other things that delight the customer
right.
within that engagement, as opposed to be scrambling to solve particular problems. And so it's taken me 18 months, maybe 2 years, with the help of some you know, very good colleagues of mine who are at various points on a similar journey, to kind of develop the expertise to understand how to market a little more clearly, and to create, you know, a scalable set of services with around a core bit of expertise that, you know, really does provide a lot of value to people. And so now I'm excited about being able to go and find customers who need this. And I'm confident that there's a lot of them out there, and that we can have great fun together.
I want to reiterate that for the folks at home. So I always like to compare things to the gestation period of a human baby, 9 months, you know. So in only two, you know, human gestation periods worth of time, you've really made serious deep changes to your business.
Yeah, and in fact, I am a new father, and it happened, the business took longer.
Sure, yeah. It almost always does. it's, you know, maybe not as much fun too as making a baby, but it's anyway. Go ahead. I got carried away there. Go ahead, yeah. Stephen.
No, I think that's exactly right. And just as I help manage expectations with clients about how long their transformations are going to take, you know, when I'm speaking with others that are considering moving out of their current position or, you know, doing something else, I say, like, look, you know, you're an expert in, you know, three things that you just talked about. You know, you could build a business around any one of those things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's a curated list of resources, plus with people helping you, you might be able to do it in 6 months. Right. But don't cut your runway short.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take time to do it even reasonably well.
Yeah. Well, we started this conversation with the notion of client concentration, where too much revenue comes from too few clients. And I'm curious, so as you've built out these specialized services, how have you generated interest in the services? Like, what's worked for you? And I'm particularly interested, this is just a note for the folks at home, anybody who has a horizontal specialization, it can be difficult to find your clients, because if you don't really know what they look like, you just know what problem you can solve for them. It's hard to find them in a demographic way, like, oh, they're going to hang out at this conference, or they're going to be on this list of companies. So, Stephen, I'm curious, how do you find your clients now, or the new ones that you're trying to find?
Right. So I've read books like Traction and Lean Startup and so forth. So I've been working through this idea of having different traction strategies for finding prospects. And one of the first things I did is around New Year's of 2018, I set my strategy to really work on my marketing and lead generation in Q1, and then try to work on sales efficiency and value in Q2.
Okay.
And so in my marketing and outreach, what I decided to do was focus on partnerships, a little bit of outbound using LinkedIn and inviting people to with content. According to the outbound strategy that appeared on your podcast, and also referrals.
Okay.
And so it's interesting, each of these actually had success in Q1. I think that I've been working in the meetup world. So this is, you know, doing technical meetups after hours, you know, in the evening for a few years. And I'd been struggling really to help really connect to potential customers this way. And not that it was solely for that,
right.
Because I just enjoyed working with the community and mentoring and helping people along their own journeys.
Real quick, just for context, did I hear that you say that you were in Phoenix, Arizona?
That's correct.
Okay. So, not as big of a city as Los Angeles, New York, whatever, but still not a small city either.
Right. And one of the parallels to Los Angeles is it's very geographically distributed. So literally getting people to the meetup
is a real challenge. Yeah.
is a challenge. Yeah. And, doing things to experiment with, to help get greater attendance or greater diversity of attendance and so forth. But anyway, one of the things that I did that was helpful is, I started to invite people to the meetup, and this had a positive effect on the meetup. You know, uh-huh. We got more people there. Yeah. And then I was able to connect with them and sometimes they would ask questions about, what it is that I do. Right. And, that's been good. And I think it's a pretty scalable mechanism, at least for the scale that I'm looking for.
Right.
Which, it's super important to be clear about what your own business objectives are.
Right. I mean, how many clients over the course of 2018 would be a great year for you?
Like three,
yeah,
four.
Right. That's what I figured. You're not even at that. Like a lot of people, I ask that question and they're like, oh, 10, which is still not a lot compared to a larger business. Yeah. And
right.
That's what I figured. Anyway, thank you. Are the meetups working better now, or are you just finding that content and direct outbound outreach is working better?
Both.
Okay.
And, we've recently done some meetups at different locations. Really one of the things I'm looking to do too is help other companies in the Valley who are interested in developing talent and getting a really building the base of expertise here in the Valley. It's actually connecting them to the people who are interested in doing that. Like they've carved out somehow some time in their evenings to go do technical things. Mm-hmm. But then also help those companies understand that they should be developing people internally and what some of the options are for that too. So, ultimately I see the meetups as a way to help grow and connect the technical community here in Phoenix. Uh-huh. And also I like doing sort of crossover partnership kind of meetups with other, I help organize the DevOps and Docker meetups here in the Valley. Mm-hmm. And, there are big data and JavaScript and, the whole gamut of meetups. And so, connecting with those organizers and doing a little bit of crossover and helping, say, software engineers understand more about what is going on underneath their application is a lot of fun.
That's great. I have a few questions about the outbound and the content marketing. I'm hoping you can share mm-hmm. with the folks who are listening what are you doing like specifically there that you feel like is contributing to the success of those?
Well, so what I was trying to do was help get pockets of expertise that I know exist in the Valley engaged with the meetup at least create awareness. And so what I did is I and my team identified people who were already interested by virtue of their titles and other things in LinkedIn that they were interested in DevOps or delivery, application delivery or the cloud or scaling. And then we just did a simple program of reaching out to 10 of those per week to invite them to present something at the meetup, actually. So mm-hmm. the hardest thing about running a meetup is content.
Okay.
And getting speakers.
Okay.
So this, in order to run a successful meetup, of course you need speakers. And so one of my primary goals here was to literally get more speakers. And then, you know, so that's happened. And also to help them know that if they're looking for someone to help them go to the cloud, that these people exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to go through a recruiter.
Right. You know, you make it sound so easy, and I'm going to halfway jokingly say, well, maybe that is because it's, I mean, maybe it's not easy, but it's actually pretty straightforward, right? You're not describing some elaborate system.
No.
You're just, you're trying to connect people together, and it sounds like be of service, and, and you know, maybe those are the two primary elements.
Right. And be of genuine value.
Right.
So, you know, even in the outbound LinkedIn kind of process that you had shared or on the podcast a few months ago, you know, you need to, even if you're working a funnel, like that funnel, it has to be a value to people in order for it to be effective. So, you know, you do have to make sure that if you're going to be walking down one of those things, that actually have thought through what the content that those people might be interested in.
Yeah.
And that goes back to personas and you know, who it is that you're really trying to reach and talk to. Now, I mentioned reaching out to 10 people per week. That's I think a tenth of what had been recommended or illustrated. And for me, that has been fine to achieve all of my objectives.
That's great. Yeah. I'm reminded of this, old school, direct mail copywriter, Gary Bensavenga, who said your marketing itself must be valuable. I mean, not just the thing you're selling. Yes, that has to have value too, but your marketing itself has to be so valuable that it earns people's attention.
And, I've also come to the conclusion that I can give away, especially since I'm developing such expertise, I can give away big chunks or things that look like big chunks of that expertise because I have so much of it.
You just said, we had, for the folks at home, we just had a brief technical issue on the call, but you just said you can give away what to your prospective clients is a large amount of expertise from their perspective, because you have so much to give. And I can't think of a better sort of final note to end on than that. I just wanted to reiterate it. I've seen that too. And I think anybody who's achieved, you know, kind of gotten past the superficial level of just competence and started to build real expertise would probably agree that, you know, you could probably talk all day if your voice would last that long about a number of things related to your work. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as part of my engagements and just working with people, you know, I will give them designs and white papers and so forth that, you know, if they were to go and do themselves would probably take them 20, 40, 60 or more hours.
Right.
And like, it's just no problem because the well is very deep.
I love that. Well, Stephen, where can the folks at home who might have questions or be curious about what you're up to, where can they go to find out more?
Sure. So Qualimente's website is at www.qualimente.com, Qualimente.com, which the name Qualimente comes from a mind for quality. So I'm very much into doing things well. And I'd love to talk with anyone who's interested, whether it's about cloud stuff or business development. And, you know, it's good stuff.
Stephen,
and thank you, Philip. Your work has been immensely valuable for me and my colleagues. So I really very much appreciate it.
I'm glad to hear that. And again, I just want to reiterate, I'm very grateful for you taking the time to be here and share what you've learned with the listeners of this show.
Yeah, you're welcome. Glad to be on.